Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Hey there, if you're listening to this and you support us on Patreon, you can hear it via the Patreon page ad-free.
So now, ladies and gentlemen, it is start time. Are you ready for start time?
You're listening to Sound Opinions, and this week we'll revisit an interview and performance from Phoebe Bridgers. I'm Jim DeRogatis.
And I'm Greg Kot. But first, we share some of our favorite songs about the sea.
This week, we're taking our show out of the harbor to share some of our favorite songs about oceans, lakes, rivers, seas, all that wet stuff, and the different ways they've inspired musicians. It's a great time of year to go out on a boat, so these are our song selections to accompany those trips. Although, Greg, you don't like boats, do you?
Yeah, well, you know, when I wear the patch, I'm good, so I can handle the boats on that front. But yeah, you know... But I have this love-hate affair with the ocean, with the high seas, with being out on big bodies of water. But I am fascinated by all the songs that have been written about that experience, and we're going to dive deep into some of the great songs in that genre. Jim, you're going to start us off, right?
I am, Greg. You know, my choices are kind of obvious, but it's the summer. I want you to put this on the boombox while you're grilling in the backyard, or better yet, when you're on the boat. We got to have a Led Zeppelin song, The Ocean. The Ocean. I love this song for so many reasons. Number one, as a young drummer, it taught me what 7/5 time was, 7/5, right? You know, bum, bum, ba da da, ba da da, ba da da, right? I mean, that riff is killer. Bonham's playing, as always, is great. And when I go back to the early Robert Plant vocals, it's just amazing how silly these lyrics were. Sitting in the sunshine, laughing in the rain, hitting on the moonshine, rocking in the grain, right? Oh, my God. I know he's embarrassed by those now, but they have a certain, you know, incredible joy of a dopey 21-year-old. And what The Ocean is actually about is him standing on these stages and looking out at 30,000 heads, a sea of people waving at him and adoring him because he was the golden god, right? So the ocean is the people, but the ocean is also the sea. Led Zeppelin, The Ocean on Sound Opinions.
We'll be right back.
the Ocean by Led Zeppelin. I always forget, too, it has that little intro, you know, a fall already, but now, which is kind of like a bunch of drunk pirates on the dock.
A sea shanty.
It is a sea shanty.
There you go.
And I got another one of those coming, but it's your turn.
Speaking of oceans, Jim, the artist named Frank Ocean sang a song about a river. I think one of the greatest songs about a river ever written. I'm talking about Moon River, written by Henry Mancini, with lyrics by Johnny Mercer. The song is notable because it was originally performed by Audrey Hepburn in that 1961 movie Breakfast at Tiffany's, won all sorts of awards, an Academy Award. The next year, it won Record of the Year in the Grammys. But here we have Frank Ocean now, and he gave us a cover of Moon River, which I think is just extraordinary. He does, he's a great vocalist. He does a couple of tricks with his vocals on this tune. He double tracks them. He does that speeded up thing, a little bit of auto-tuning. There's some alteration going on in one of the vocal channels, and it's almost like he's having a conversation with himself. This is a song about these two drifters who are seeking adventure in this glorious unknown, you know, the Moon River. Where's it going to take me? And Ocean himself is somewhat of a searcher, you know, in matters of identity, in matters of, you know, where is home. It's a beautiful song that suits a lot of the thematic concerns that Frank Ocean has had throughout his career. This is Frank Ocean with Moon River on Sound Opinions.
Two drifters off to see the world. There's such a crazy world to see. We're all chasing after all the same, chasing after all.
That is Frank Ocean with Moon River, a cover of that classic song. Jim, what's your next pick?
Greg, you ever have one of these songs that when it first comes out and you're reviewing it, or even just as a fan, you're listening to it, you absolutely think you hate it, and then eventually it
grows on you?
Well, you know, yeah. Sometimes, pop music is funny that way. There can be this hook, right? And it becomes an earworm, and you can't get it out of your head. So you either have to learn to love your captor, or it drives you crazy. I think that's sort of the case with this song, Admiral of the Sea by Grant Hart. When Husker Du, one of our favorite bands ever, broke up, everybody put their money on Bob Mould. And of course, he went on to extraordinary things as a solo artist and as the leader of Sugar. But, you know, Grant Hart was no slouch. You know, Husker Du was 50-50 in terms of the songwriting. And many of the most interesting and most melodic songs often were Hart's. He debuted with this incredibly pompous record, though, in 91 by his band, first after Husker Du, Nova Mob. It was called The Last Days of Pompeii. And it was this horrible, tortured concept album in which the rocket scientist Wernher von Braun goes back to Pompeii and sees Vesuvius erupt and somehow winds up leading the armies of Pliny the Elder. I have no idea what Grant was going on about. You know, but I remember in particular this song, and it drove me crazy in a bad way. Separated from the context of that horrible concept album, it actually has this sort of a sense of a 5 or 6 year old kid, right, playing dress up, playing pirate or playing admiral of the sea, and like going out on his inner tube and thinking that's his ship and crossing the ocean. If you look at it like that, it's got its charms, and also just, you know, I am the admiral of the sea, right? It's got this incredible hook, and I've decided I initially hated this song, now I love it. Admiral of the Sea by Grant Hart's Nova Mob on Sound Opinions. I am an admiral of the land. I didn't know there could be such a thing. And there's many men and armies under my command. You go, Grant. Nova Mob, Admiral of the Sea. Greg, you got another sea pick?
I do indeed, Jim. Sail on Sailor from the Beach Boys. This was from the 70s era, the up and down 70s era of the Beach Boys, and that's putting it mildly.
See, I had Sloop John B. on my list. I was going to go there. But
that was slightly earlier in the Beach Boys'
way
history.
Way earlier, when they were great.
And now we have a period when Brian Wilson is in seclusion. He's sort of checked out of the band in many ways. His old buddy Van Dyke Parks, with whom he wrote much of the Smile album, that actually never came out when it was recorded in the 60s, finally came out decades later, was considered a huge failure for the Beach Boys at the time it was being worked on and abandoned. But Van Dyke and Brian always had this kind of bond. And Van Dyke sensed that Brian was in a bad period when he came over to Brian's house in the early 70s and presented him with the skeleton of a song called Sail on Sailor. And in a lot of ways, he knew that Brian was going through a tough time. And this was a song about going through the treachery of the sea. It fit perfectly with what they were both going through at the time, the pain that they were feeling. You know, you go out on the ocean and nothing will remind you sooner of how small you are in creation.
This is true.
You know, you will suddenly recognize I am just a little pea compared to everything else around me. This ocean can do whatever it wants with me right now. It can swallow me up. It can make me feel incredible, but I am completely at its mercy. And this song is talking very directly about the power of that ocean, the ability of it to make you feel so small and lonely and inferior, and then somehow powering through. And I think one of the reasons that it does that is because of the lead vocal by one Blondie Chaplin, who was a late addition to the Beach Boys roster. He was not one of the original members, obviously. He came from South Africa. He was an artist signed to the Beach Boys label by Carl Wilson, who was effectively running the band during this period of time. And Carl was having difficulty with the vocal. How do I approach this? Blondie stepped up and said, I think I can do this. And the power of his vocals kind of gives you a sense of hope at the end of this song. It's not so much a song about the treachery of the ocean. It's like, we're going to get through this. We're going to power through. And I think that's why people love this Beach Boys song as much as they do. This is Sail on Sailor from the Beach Boys from 1973 on Sound Opinions. When we come back, more of our picks for Sound Opinions at Sea. And later, an interview and live performance from artist Phoebe Bridgers. That's in a minute on Sound Opinions.
Sound Opinions is supported by Goose Island. Since 1988, Goose Island has been brewing award-winning beers in Chicago that are inspired by this city. Take 312 Lemonade Shandy, Tropical Beer Hug Double IPA, and a rotating series of hazy IPAs only available in Chicago. You know, every time we go down to Goose Island, there's another one that they're pushing on us.
That's right.
They're all good.
Absolutely. And what supporters of musical culture, you know, in the city of Chicago and elsewhere, if you go to a show in Chicago and you see that Goose Island sign, you know you're in good hands. They're music fans as well as great beer makers at Goose Island. So we're really proud to be associated with them.
The Goose Island Beer Company, Chicago's beer.
Sound Opinions is supported by Goose Island. Since 1988, Goose Island's been brewing beers in the spirit of Chicago.
You can find IPAs, Lemonade Shandy, and limited releases in-store or at one of Goose's venues in Chicago. Goose Island Beer Company, Chicago's beer. And we're back. Some people would say we're lost at sea every week, but this week we are in particular doing some of our favorite songs inspired by the sea. We've got a few tracks left to share, and I get to go next. You know, Greg, I grew up in New Jersey, so going down the shore, as we call it, right? Going to Keensburg, going to Lavalette, going to Asbury Park.
Yeah.
A lot of time to think about the ocean and great ocean songs. And they don't get any better than the Velvet Underground. The backstory of its song, Ocean, is fascinating. You know, the Velvets split with John Cale, and they were moving record labels. That wonderful live album, 1969 Live, comes out in the midst of that. They go to MGM Atlantic, and they make Loaded. And Ocean was in consideration for that. It was recorded in 69, didn't make the cut, never really saw the light of day except for Insane Tape Traders until the VU album of outtakes from this group. What I love about this is, you know, obviously the lyrics, here come the ocean, the waves down by the shore, right? Okay, but the way the music captures the ocean, thanks to Mo Tucker, one of the great drummers of all time and the most underrated. You know, these kind of rolling rhythms and the mallets on the toms and the cymbals. This song sounds like the ocean. It sounds like you are adrift at sea. And that's what I love about it. Velvet Underground, Ocean on Sound Opinions. Velvet's Ocean on Sound Opinions. I think it's also very close cousin, Greg, to Heroin, you know, in the same way.
Yeah, an epic song.
Yeah, absolutely. And the way that that song evokes this drug trip, this song evokes the ocean. What do you got?
This is another song in the mold of Sail on Sailor, which I just played from the Beach Boys, A Salty Dog from Procol Harum. I admit I am a complete sucker for this band. I love Procol Harum.
Yeah.
They write these fantastical images. I mean, A Whiter Shade of Pale. Anybody who can figure that song out,
you're a better man than me. I have no idea what it means.
You know?
I always thought that song was like the band on the Titanic playing as the ocean liner sank.
Yeah, it's an incredible song, and it's a song that just constantly is a point of discussion. And I think A Salty Dog is in its league. Less highly rated song, perhaps, less well known, but I think right up there in the Procol Harum list of greatest songs ever. The lyricist was a guy by the name of Keith Reed. The guy who wrote all the music and sang most of the lead vocals was keyboardist Gary Brooker. They had a 1969 album named after this song. There's a beautiful string arrangement on this song. Friends of mine who are huge classical music buffs gravitated toward A Salty Dog because they said, that's Chopin. These guys are riffing on Chopin. Procol, Whiter Shade of Pale was riffing on Bach. These guys knew their classical influences. This is a song about a voyage apparently around the tip of the Cape of Good Hope, around the tip of southern Africa, which is a very treacherous route in the old days of sailing the high seas. There's a shipwreck. Apparently, there are no survivors. A lot of controversy about what this song actually means. One interpretation that I really like is that the last verse is talking about these guys being lifted up to heaven. You know, upon the seventh seasick day, we made our port of call. Mm. They're all dead, and they're now ascending to a different planet, a different space, you know?
Did you miss the part before where I said people could play this show at their barbecue? A little uplifting music.
Well, it is kind of uplifting in a way. It reminds me a little bit of A Mutiny on the Bounty. It's got all these kind of epic overtones to it, and it's a beautiful song. A Salty Dog by Procol Harum on Sound Opinions. Great song about the high seas, at least in my opinion, A Salty Dog by Procol Harum. Jim, you've got another one for us, right?
I do. This is the most obvious of my picks for this show. But, I mean, how can you not go with Otis Redding sitting on the dock of the bay. You ever been to Sausalito?
Yeah, absolutely beautiful.
Well, sort of. I mean, San Francisco is
ocean,
right across
there.
You know. And Sausalito is sort of the low-rent cousin.
Yeah.
Otis Redding had just played the Fillmore. He was at the height of his powers, one of the great voices of his generation. He was staying on a houseboat, you know, in Sausalito. The wonderful autobiographical simplicity of this song. I left my home in Georgia. I headed for the Frisco Bay. You know, and he's sitting on the dock of that bay. He is watching the ships roll in and the tide roll out, and he's describing it. Steve Cropper had to finish the song because Redding tragically died out here in the Midwest, December 1967. You know, you got the incredible band of Steve Cropper on guitar, Donald Duck Dunn on bass, Al Jackson on drums. I mean, this is as good as it gets. And there was concern at the label that maybe this was too pop to put out, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, on the short list of, like, if you had to make the list of a dozen perfect songs in the entire history of pop music, right, you know, you'd have to really work hard to come up with better than Sitting on the Dock of the Bay. And apparently from the very beginning, Otis wanted those sounds of the waves and the seagulls at the beginning, and Steve Cropper thought it was a little bit cheesy, but he added it in because that's what Otis wanted. What a beautiful song. Otis Redding, Sitting on the Dock of the Bay on Sound Opinions.
I left my home in Georgia, headed for the Frisco Bay. 'Cause I've had nothing to live for, and look like nothing's gonna come my way. So I'm just gonna sit on the dock of the bay, watching the tide roll away. Sitting on a dock of the bay, wasting time.
Otis Redding, Sitting on the Dock of the Bay. You're going to have to work hard to top that, Cot.
Well, that's a great song. I'm going to go completely the opposite way. Not even going to try to be positive or uplifting with this song. It just is one of the most disturbing songs ever written.
I want to remind people about your sea phobia here, in case they didn't hear that in the beginning, where you fessed up, you're afraid of the water.
Here you go. You know, water can be interesting the way the imagery is used. You know, take me to the river, Al Green. It's you know, it's about spiritual cleansing, renewal. A lot of people associate bodies of water with this kind of sense of renewal. But it also can be a burial ground. Every mafia movie you ever seen, the guy's thrown into the river, right? I think P.J. Harvey's tapping into that tradition with Down by the Water from her 1995 album, To Bring You My Love. You know, the song seems to suggest that an innocence was being lost here. It's not quite clear who's losing their innocence, but something bad is happening. And you have to sort of read between the lines. What happened under that bridge? We still don't know the answer to that question in this song. So she's combining a couple of traditions here that I was talking about, the spiritual renewal, the burial ground. Oh, help me, Jesus, come through this storm. That's one of the lines in the song. She's asking for God's help, Jesus' help, in getting through this trauma that she's going through. And I had to lose her to do her harm is the very next two lines in the song. And you're going, uh-oh, we got a problem here. So she's standing on the banks of this river, much like Otis is.
Yeah.
You know, observing something, participating in something perhaps, but on the shore, looking into this river. And she's begging these fish at the end of the song to bring back her purity in a way, to bring back my daughter to me. One of the interpretations is that there is a child killing. A child has been killed in this song. Another interpretation is that she was abused as a child, the narrator of the song we're talking about, and has come back to the river to seek some sort of redemption. So there's all sorts of interpretations. I've talked to Polly about the song a couple times because I'm endlessly fascinated by it. He says, I'm not going to tell you.
No, she won't go there, no.
You know, it's up to you. It's Polly whatever
Jean
you
Harvey,
think it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, P.J. Harvey with Down by the Water on Sound Opinions.
I took her home.
PJ Harvey, Down by the Water. Man, that's a creepy song.
Oh, man. Yeah, what are you bumming everybody out for, man?
We're going to be swimming back to shore in a minute, but before that, we want to hear from you. Leave us a voice message on our website, soundopinions.org, with your favorite song about the sea. Coming up after the break, a conversation and live performance from Phoebe Bridgers at the Goose Island Tap Room in Chicago. That's in a minute on Sound Opinions.
Remember in 2018 when Border Patrol separated thousands of refugee kids from their parents, deported those parents back to their home countries, and kept the kids in the United States? Believe it or not, 6 years later, there are still hundreds of families who have not yet been reunited.
Though we as a community may feel hopeless at times, we recently learned about an organization called Al Otro Lado, which works to reunify families. They provide holistic legal and humanitarian support to refugees, deportees, and other migrants in the U.S. and Tijuana through a multidisciplinary, client-centered, harm reduction-based practice.
Since 2018, they've reunited over 100 refugee families ripped apart by the zero-tolerance policy of the previous administration. Once reunited, Al Otro Lado helps each family find legal representation, housing, and the counseling they need in order to heal and get back on their feet.
Imagine having your child ripped from your arms and never knowing when you would see them again. We can't let family separations go on. If you're like us and believe that all families belong together, then join us supporting Al Otro Lado and donate today.
You can find the link to donate to Al Otro Lado in the description of this episode, or go to gum.fm/charity and donate today. That's gum.fm/charity.
You can also consider volunteering with the organization, which offers opportunities that are both in-person and virtual. The best way to get involved is by filling out an application on their website, elotrolado.org/volunteer.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Welcome back to Sound Opinions. I'm Greg Kot. He's Jim DeRogatis. That's a little bit of the song Kyoto by our guest this week, singer-songwriter Phoebe Bridgers. It's a highlight of her album Punisher, which shot her into the upper echelons of the music industry after its release in 2020.
You're absolutely right, Greg. And now Phoebe can be found headlining festivals, performing on Saturday Night Live. She's everywhere. But when we taped this interview and performance, her debut album, Stranger in the Alps, had just been out for a year. We recorded the session in 2018. She was only 23 years old. And we should say that one topic that came up was her prior work with Ryan Adams and the impact of Me Too in the music industry. She didn't connect those two topics at the time, but 6 months after this episode first aired, she and many other women came forward with their experiences of emotional abuse at the hands of Adams.
That's right, Jim, but we started our session at the Goose Island Tap Room on a lighter note. We wanted to know where she got the name Stranger in the Alps for her debut album.
Because there's a TV edit of Big Lebowski where when Walter is beating up the dude's car, he's screaming something very inappropriate, and they creatively replaced it with, "This is what happens when you find a stranger in the Alps."
Yeah. "This is what happens when you blank a stranger in the blank" becomes, "This is what happens, when you find a stranger in the Alps."
"See what happens, Larry? See what happens when you find a stranger in the Alps? This is what happens."
Now let's hear a song from that album. This is Phoebe Bridgers with Scott Street, live from the Goose Island Tap Room on Sound Opinions.
walking Scott Street feeling like a stranger. With an open heart, open container. I've got a stack of mail and a tall can. It's a shower beer, it's a payment plan. There's helicopters over my head. Oh, every night when I go to bed, I'm spending money and I earned it. But when I'm lonely, that's when I'll burn it. Do you feel ashamed when you hear my name? I asked you, how is your sister? I heard she got her degree. I said that makes me feel old. And you said, what does that make me? I asked you how I was playing drums. Said it's too much stuff to carry. And what about the band? You said they're all getting married. Do you feel ashamed?
Phoebe Bridgers, live on Sound Opinions, Scott Street. What a wonderful song. From Stranger in the Alps, the album. There is a lot of humor in your music, and there's also a lot of intensely personal stuff in your music. You write about battling depression, friends or yourself.
Jesus Christ, I'm so blue all the time, and that's just how I feel, always have, and I always will, always have, and always will.
Sid and Nancy, and why that story resonates with you. What inspires you to sit down and write with that kind of empathy?
I think it's just my outlet for those feelings. I don't feel like I'm a particularly dark personality. And also, that's what I look for in music, I feel like. But the Sid and Nancy thing, I think it was just so disturbing to me that it's such a romanticized story and our culture has such a good time, like, just, yeah, just taking stuff out of context and making stuff seem cool that's not.
For a chemical imbalance, you sure know how to ride a train. Your revolution is a deathbed and the music is your maid. When someone comes knocking with a needle on a tray, only your lonesome lies beside you, for you told me not to stay.
Something really has to kind of get in my head for me to write about it.
You make this EP. I remember when it came out, and there was all this, like, hubbub on the online. And then I saw you were on all these tours. You're like, you were out on the road almost constantly, it seemed like. And I kept thinking, how did she get mixed up with that tour? Well, put Phoebe Bridgers, who does these kind of quiet acoustic tunes, with this band. So what was that experience like, and why did you feel you needed to do some of that? I mean, were you told you got to do that for your career?
It's hard, like, playing for a crowd of people who don't have any context for your music whatsoever. And some of those shows were soul-sucking, but I also found a way to, you know, at least the 20 people who chose to be in the very front, they chose to be there to listen. So I try to always find a little bit of silver lining, but if there's a bar in the back of the venue, it's rough to be an acoustic act. And actually, this is maybe one of the only times I got sane advice from Ryan. He told me that when the room's getting loud, you should just get really, really quiet because it'll freak them out. It's actually kind of true. Like, everybody's like, what's happening? Why is everything so quiet?
Well, I am tired of being sad. I feel it when I wake up, and it just stays bad.
My tick is to just fully go for it and try to, like, be louder than I've ever been, and it just doesn't sound good. So yeah, made it through.
So it worked, is what you're saying, that people actually sort of like, what's going on? Why is it so quiet?
Yes.
Yeah. Wow. That's interesting. So the experience of being on the road and doing all these tours and constantly touring, did that feed into the work and what the album ended up being?
Was
Absolutely. It a good experience?
I was so frustrated being gone, and I was so eager to record, but then I ended up writing my, like, four favorite songs from the album in the, like, right between another tour. So ended up being really grateful to be gone.
Take a dirty picture, babe. I can't sleep and I miss your face. In my hands and in my knees. Tell me what you wanna do.
What was the decision like, you know, in deciding? I mean, you worked with a pretty well-respected producer, Tony Berg. It sounded like you had a number of people that might have done that. What? How did that process go for you? Like, okay, people are going to be paying attention to this record. I need to hire the right guy. Did you always think you needed a producer? And B, how did you decide that producer?
No, I was positive I didn't need a producer. I was going to record, like, a four-track Nebraska album.
Cool.
And then I started meeting with some people in studios, and I think that there's this really common thing nowadays where a producer is just a glorified engineer a lot of the time. Like, I would go in, and the person hadn't even, like, Googled me. Like, they literally hadn't done the research at all, and all they do is, you know, press record. And Tony's a true producer. He's like, let's take it up half a step, and he has this crazy encyclopedic knowledge of music, so referenced all these insane sounds, and he's been around forever, but, you know, he's maybe one of the only people who has been around for so long and who stays, like, really, really hungry for new music. Like, I gave them the Mitski record, and then every day when I went into the studio, he was listening to it. He shows me new stuff that I haven't heard of all the time. But yeah, just like I didn't know I needed a real producer, but it was so cool working with him. So
what convinced you though that you needed it to work with him as opposed, because it
literally
sounded like
just going to his house.
Okay, so you met him and he can.
Yeah, someone, a mutual friend, was like, I think there's someone you should meet. And I went over for like an hour meeting and left 8 hours later, having gotten like a finger picking guitar lesson. Like, you know, he taught me some crazy modes and we watched Beatles YouTube videos and there were bands in and out, people jumping in the pool. It was a very, like, just, it's a cool spot.
Sounds very Laurel Canyon.
Yeah, for sure.
So you said four of the best songs, your favorite songs for this record came together. Was that one you were going to play next?
I was going to play Killer, which I wasn't even going to record. And then, because it's the single from the 7-inch, but then Tony had crazy chord ideas, and then I wanted John Doe to sing on something from X, and he was like, how about Killer? And I was too embarrassed to tell him I wasn't planning on recording it. So I was like, we have to do it. He wants to do it.
If John Doe likes your song, it's probably a pretty good tune.
For sure. So yeah, we decided to. And yeah, and he's the creepy voice in the background.
Sometimes I think I'm a killer, scared you in your house, even scared myself by talking about Dahmer on your couch. But I can't sleep next to a body, even harmless in death. Plus I'm pretty sure I'd miss you and faking sleep to count your breath. Can the killer in me tame the fire in you? Or is there nothing left to do for us? I am sick of the chase, but I'm hungry for blood, and there's nothing I can do. But when I'm sick and tired, when my mind is barely there, when a machine keeps me alive, and I'm losing all my hair, I hope you kiss my rotten head and pull the plug. Know that I've burned every playlist, and I've given
That is Killer from Phoebe Bridgers at the Goose Island Tap Room.
Does it bother you when people say, writers say, you know, great young female singer-songwriter? Why isn't it just great songwriter, singer-songwriter?
Yeah, I think it depends on the writer. I think, like, when I get interviewed by women or young women, it's sometimes I'll end up, especially now with Me Too and everything, I have many a time ended up talking for like 2 extra hours about being a woman in music. But yeah, you know, you get indie darling. I got that the other day and I was like, what? or how female fronted bands and female singer songwriters get compared always to Joni Mitchell. Love Joni Mitchell. I sound nothing like Joni Mitchell. Literally nothing. It's just your only reference. And male singer-songwriters, like, nobody would see a dude singer-songwriter in a coffee shop and say, you sound like Joni Mitchell. Mm. So, yeah, it's just absurd. I think it depends on where it's coming from. And, yeah, it's infuriating.
Yeah.
Let me be a guy and compare you to another female artist. when I first heard your music, I was thinking Joan Didion. And I think it was because I also teach journalism as literature in college, right? And we read Joan Didion. And then I read this interview where you said, she's inspiring you. And I think it's that wonderful thing that she was able to do for 2 decades, looking at California, which is so sunny and perfect on the surface, where you grew up. And then, like David Lynch, right? She goes underground. What's happening under the surface? Does she inspire some of your lyrics?
Yeah. I mean, I think everything that I intake and that I love inspires me, but definitely her. I love her way of talking about California specifically, but everything where she's bringing up the darkness of it, but she's not coming from a place of higher ground. Like, she's in it.
Yeah.
You know, she's, you know, talking about the higher class in this horrible way, and then she's right in the thick of it, and she knows that, which yeah, it's just like a really insightful, cool point of view. And it's weird stuff about Hollywood and California that you never would have heard of otherwise.
Take a dirty picture, babe. I can't sleep and I miss your face. In my hands and in my knees.
I mean, once you started working within the industry, you know, as opposed to being an open mic artist in LA, were you surprised by what you encountered in terms of that sort of unspoken or maybe spoken discrimination and bias?
I think the darkest thing is that I wasn't surprised. I was prepared. I knew going to art school, you know, you have female teachers who tell you horror stories. You just, your whole life, you hear how it is. And yeah, when I was a kid, my mom would like wait outside of, you know, if I was going to some producer or some like kid in a band's house that I'd never been to before, she would like wait outside in a car. Being taught that from like a young age, that you need to just be protected at any time, is horrific. Mm-hmm. I mean, you still do, which sucks.
But it seems like the hashtag Me Too movement is really slow in coming to the music world, mm-hmm. as opposed to media, politics, Hollywood, everywhere else. Why?
Just convenience, I think. I think it takes a storm, like something needs to start the storm. And I think it is. People are getting taken down left and right, which is amazing. But yeah, there's like a lot to sift through. There's a lot that needs to burn to the ground before it can be rebuilt. I think that nobody's surprised. Like, no woman is surprised when people get taken down. I think call-out culture is great in ways, and call-out culture is really dangerous in ways, but I really hope that it works. Seeing it work is really invigorating, and I hope it keeps going.
You're listening to Sound Opinions. We're here at the Goose Island Tap Room with Phoebe Bridgers. Phoebe, you got another song for us?
Yeah, this one's called Smoke Signals.
Spent a week in the cold. just long enough to hold in it with you any longer, it would have got old. Singing Ace of Spades when Lemmy died, but nothing's changed, LA's alright. I'm sleeping in my bed again and getting in my head, and I walk around the reservoir. You must have been looking for me, sending small hoax signals, pelicans circling, burning trash out on the beach. Shut, something happened when you were a kid. I didn't know you then, and I'll never understand why it feels like I did. How soon is now in an 80s sedan? You slept inside of it because your dad lived in a campground in the back of a van. You said that song will creep you out till you're dead. And you must have been looking for me, sending small hoax signals, circling, burning trash out on the beach. Bed. We'll watch TV while the light's on the street, put all the stars to death. It's been on my mind since Bowie died, just checking out to hide from life. All of our problems, I'm gonna solve them. It's you riding shotgun, speeding, I am the cops. And you must have been looking for me, sending small hoax signals, pelican circling, burning trash.
Thank you.
spoke signals from Phoebe Bridgers on Sound Opinions here at the Goose Island Tap Room.
Able assist there from Marshall Vore. Thank you so much for coming on Sound Opinions.
Anytime.
Man, we love Phoebe. And Mr. Cott, what do we have on the show next week?
Next week, Jim, we're back at that Goose Island Tap Room with a live performance and interview with Pedro the Lion. And don't forget to check out our bonus podcast feed.
I've been waiting for this one. One of the best songs ever about drums and many other great tunes.
To get my first drum set
The views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this program belong solely to Sound Opinions and not necessarily to Columbia College Chicago or our sponsors. Thanks, as always, to our Patreon supporters. Sound Opinions is produced by Andrew Gill, Alex Claiborne, and our associate producer, Sol Delgadillo. Our social media consultant is Katie Cott.